going to have Tom Benson with us. And, Tom, I'll let you introduce our other guest, who this is her first time to visit the radio station. So I want to make sure that we are as inviting as possible.
And I will say that the IQ in this room just went up.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Because Aggie Stevenson is our grants coordinator at the aquarium, and she does a great job in a number of areas, including grants.
The Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute. When I say the smart stuff think tank over at the Baylor campus, yeah, that's kind of really what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and it's,
I forget the real name.
We have a tremendous staff over there. But the other part of it is, Jeff, we have, visiting scientists from all over the country that come here on a very frequent basis. Just the last couple of days, we've been hosting the Southeastern Fishes Council. So you had fish biologists from across the Southeast, and that region goes as far west as, I believe, Arkansas, and includes all of the typical states that you would think of as SEC states, I guess.
That's a good way of putting it.
And we've got these, fish biologists that are here collaborating on a number of projects, sharing their research with each other, and, thinking about ways that they can protect the amazing biodiversity that we have here in the
Southeast. All right, now, what we're really talking about today is the watershed path. So talk to me about the watershed path.
That's right. So the National Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, the Chickamauga chapter, was instrumental in helping us get this watershed path up and running at the Conservation Institute facility. And what it is five signs that walk people through what humans have been doing on that land over the last possibly 8,000 years. When we were preparing for the Conservation Institute facility to be open, we had an archaeologists working to see what human interactions have been happening there. So they found evidence of temporary campsites, evidence of fire pits and tools that date up to 3,000 years ago. So these signs...
Now, that's real campsites, mm-hmm, with actual flint napping, materials and things, 3,000
right.
years old. But we have evidence that takes us, where we stand right now on Moccasin Bend, or sit, mm-hmm, or rock back and forth the way I normally used to do, 8,000 years, 10,000 years.
So we have direct evidence that this site where the Conservation Institute is was at least 3,000. It may have been up to 8,000 years ago. And these signs kind of walk people through what role water plays in that, so why people would have used that as a campsite. If you think about going out camping today, a lot of times people want to go by streams and rivers, and so that's why this would have been an ideal place.
Obviously it would have been. And Tom is one of those guys that will actually get out and go and look, mm-hmm, at things where most people will not. And I'm always out by myself, and I'm hiking and I'm kayaking, and I find these real oddities that are out there on the river, and I have these questions, and I go back and people speculate. He'll actually go look with me, which is always nice. And I remember talking about Dragon Canoe and some of the mounds that I found around here. That was well before they named that road Lost Mound and put the big, fence up around what was clearly a mound. I don't understand sometimes why the movers and shakers in town don't jump on these opportunities. This is rich historical ground.
Yeah, and this is a short walking tour. It's open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. during the normal operating hours of the Institute, because we do have a gate to get back to the facility. But we have monthly opportunities for people to also tour the facility. So you can go to our website and you can sign up for those tours. And I think it's just kind of interesting because this area is so beautiful. And when you, stand on the banks of the Tennessee River and kind of imagine what it might have been like 3,000 years ago and how it is very similar in many ways to what it was then, you can imagine people coming through here every once in a while, and probably
traffic wasn't as bad.
No, it wasn't.
It was actually the first year of the old Johnny construction.
Yeah, the downtown construction was going on then, of course, but I think MLK was open at the time. You have hacked your way up from St. Augustine through, the Spanish bayonets, the palmetto, the sawbriars, the gators, the skeeters, and you finally get into some nice temperate rainforest. Ah, it's beautiful up here. Mm-hmm. And then you find this big flat place where you can grow stuff, and there's deer bounding around everywhere. There's Bambis all over the place. Bam, bam, bam. You just bring them down. And fish and water, fresh water, mm-hmm, falling out of the skies, literally, and out of the sides of the rocks. I believe I'll stay here.
It's a beautiful place, and I have the privilege to work at that facility and it is an inspiring view. It's inspiring the work that's going on at the Institute. And so, yeah, you can definitely see why people would have wanted to stop there.
You know, yep. I think it's interesting, too, because river basins have been cradles of civilization around the world. You know, probably the first world history class you ever took, you know, you learned about the Tigris and Euphrates and all these places. And I think that most people probably realize the long history that the Chattanooga area has had. But I think it's kind of interesting to think about it as one of the world's cradles of civilization.
But you know what? That's just it, though. So many of those basins have either run dry because of dams and they've built on them, or they've flooded them because they needed to build the dam, and so there's no way to actually explore it anymore. Now, we have some dams around here, but not much of the area got flooded. I mean, there was a few people lost some homes. We lost a couple of opportunities possibly, but there are still just ridiculous. Somebody called yesterday, said every time his dad plowed the field down near the river, they would just go out there and just dig up, I mean, arrowheads by the dozens. And that tells you that was a long time that
Absolutely.
People camped on that site. It's not like they just dumped arrowheads out. You know, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, generation after generation after generation, from down around the Nature Center to, you know, all the way out to, you know, the intake valves at Raccoon Mountain. I think how many babies were born here? How many battles were fought here? You know,
it's a very, you know, it's an area that's very rich in history. And the watershed path not only talks about the history, but it also talks about our modern connections and how water impacts our lives and how we impact rivers as well. So,
hey, was anything new found? Was there anything that was found that was, because this is something that me and one of the local archaeologists have law torrents on, and that was the building of walls in certain areas that doesn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, agriculture. They weren't just clearing a field so they could, because, I mean, it's on the side of something. And the Audubon folks and the Tennessee River Gorge folks are kind of on my side on this. There seem to be walls built in places where you would just want a wall. And I've been told by the local archaeologists that, well, the people that lived here in the prehistoric times, Paleolithic times, they didn't build these walls. Well, they seem to have.
What was interesting is when this cultural assessment began, they looked at because, you know, there are some significant historic sites surrounding that particular piece of land. They went through the first part of the archaeological assessment. They said,
this is all wrong.
They said we didn't find anything, which makes us wonder why. So we want to go a little bit deeper and look at this.
Yeah.
And they went through three phases of that. And they came up with this, you know, kind of interesting story that this particular plot was probably used as kind of a migrant campsite from time to time. There would be periods of time where it might be used for a month here and a month there, fairly close together, and there might be decades or centuries that went by without any use of the property.
I've got this fantastic book that actually has this massive fold-out thing that is the world timeline, and it is basically it divided up. Here's the space timeline, and here is where the Mayans and the Incans and the Egyptians all popped in. There were people living here so long ago, it's preposterous. The Eastern wood folk, woodland people, and they had massive agriculture. And we don't know diddly about this area. We've known more about other, I mean, hard to get to places in the jungle and the desert than where we live.
Yeah. I think you know, some of that is probably due to familiarity. You know, we want to go to exotic places and explore remote locations.
Might be safer to stick around these days.
That might be. But you're right. The history here is every bit as rich and interesting and exciting as other parts of the planet.
We still don't know who the moon-eyed people were down there. Why were they so moon-eyed? Yep. The ones down there, Dug Gap and Fort Mountain, I mean, what were they doing? I think I have an idea, but I mean, we won't go there. Now, the idea of getting money, private money, non-profit money to be able to do things like this. Mm-hmm. That's a tough road to hoe. Better you than me. You obviously have some skills. I am going to ask you kind of an odd question. Daughters of the American Revolution, wonderful organization. Would there be any kickback considering the strange revisionist, we don't like the way history went, so let's change it sort of sweep that's going across America today?
From them, well, we had a number of people reviewing and helping us with the content, but it really started with the experts, the archaeologists, our scientists at the Conservation Institute talking about the ecology of the area. And the Chickamauga chapter folks who helped us review the signs were so excited to have the history that the archaeological, you know, the real science behind it.
Sure.
And they were really excited about it and didn't have any, you know, big content questions and that sort of thing. The neat thing we're talking about, you know, what we actually found there on the site. We've got pictures in some of the signs of what was found there at the site. But no, there really wasn't any big question
controversy
marks. Yeah,
no. Well, I mean, a lot of folks don't realize that, you know, some of the early history, I mean, the Revolutionary War, some call it the last battle of the Revolutionary War after the English had already given up, was the Battle of Dragon Canoe down at Shellmount. And because he did not. He was a badass. And but he ran into a couple of other badasses named John Sevier and Andrew Jackson, and he lost that one. But, I mean, that the history is extremely rich. I don't think we teach it very well either, so good for you guys for actually, you know, trying to fill in that gap.